That is all very eloquent, my young friend. But if you had lived to Anna's age, or even to mine, you would have learnt that the people who get rid of the fear of poverty and children and all the other family troubles and devote themselves to having a good time of it only leave their minds free for the fear of old age and ugliness and impotence and death. The childless laborer is more tormented by his wife's idleness and her constant demands for amusement and distraction than he would be by 20 children. His wife is more wretched than he. I've had my share of vanity, for as a young man I was much admired by women, and as a statue I am much praised by art critics. But I confess that had I found nothing to do in the world but to wallow in these delights, I should have cut my throat. When I married Anna's mother, or perhaps to be strictly correct, I should say, when I at last gave in and allowed Anna's mother to marry me, I knew that I was planting thorns in my pillow. And that marriage for me, a swaggering young officer thitherto unvanquished, meant defeat and capture.
Father!
Well, I'm sorry to shock you, my love, but since one has stripped every rag of decency from this discussion, I may as well tell the frozen truth.
And I suppose I was one of the thorns, eh?
Oh, by no means, my dear. You were very often a rose. Your mother had most of the trouble you gave.
Then may I ask, Commander, why you have left heaven to come here and wallow, as you express it, in sentimental beatitude, which you confess would once have driven you to cut your throat.
Gad, that's true.
What, are you going back on your word? And does your demonstration of the approaching sterilization and extinction of mankind...
I never
demonstrated... ...lead to anything?
I never demonstrated the extinction of mankind. Life cannot will its own extinction. I had not finished when His Excellency interrupted me.
I begin to doubt whether you will ever finish, my friend. You know, you are extremely fond of hearing yourself talk.
That's very true. But since you have endured so much, you may as well endure to the end. Long before the sterilization which I described becomes more than a clearly foreseen possibility, the reaction will begin. The great central purpose of breeding the race. Yes, breeding it to heights now deemed as superhuman. That purpose which is now hidden in a poisonous cloud of love and romance and fastidiousness will break through into clear sunlight as a purpose no longer to be confused with the gratification of personal fancies, the impossible realization of boys' and girls' dreams of bliss, or the need of older people for companionship or money. Now, do my sex the justice to admit, Senora, that we have always recognized that the sex relation is not a personal or friendly relation at all?
Not a personal or friendly relation? What relation is more personal, more sacred, more holy?
Sacred and holy, if you like, Anna, but not personally friendly. I learned by experience that my proposals to a woman were always the outcome of a perfectly simple impulse of my manhood towards her womanhood.
You mean that it was an immoral impulse?
Nature, my dear lady, is what you call immoral. I blush for it, but I cannot help it. Nature is a pander, time a wrecker, and death a murderer. I have always preferred to stand up to those facts and build institutions on their recognition. You prefer to propitiate the three devils by proclaiming their thrift, their chastity, and their loving kindness, and to base your institutions on these flatteries. Is it any wonder that the institutions do not work smoothly?
Wong.
Yes, Commander.
You are still extremely abstract.
I'm sorry.
Tell us, what used the ladies to say?
Commander, confidence for confidence. First, tell me what you used to say to the ladies.
I? Oh, I swore that I would be faithful to the death, that I should die if they refused me, that no woman could ever mean to me what she did.
She?
Well, whoever it happened to be at the time, my dear. I had certain things I always said. One of them was, even when I was 80, one white hair of the woman I loved would make me tremble more than the thickest gold tress from the most beautiful young head. Another was that I couldn't bear to think of anyone else being the mother of my children.
You old rascal.
Not a bit of it. I really believed with all my soul at the moment I had a heart, not like you. And it was this sincerity that made me successful.
Oh.
Sincerity? To be fool enough to believe a stamping, thumping lie? That's what you call sincerity? To be so greedy for a woman that you deceive yourself in your eagerness to deceive her? Sincerity, you call
it? Oh, damn your sophistries. I was a man in love, not a lawyer. And the women loved me for it, bless them.
They made you think so. What will you say when I tell you that though I played the lawyer so callously, they made me think so, too? Yes, I also had my moments of infatuation in which I gushed nonsense and believed it. Sometimes the desire to give pleasure by saying beautiful things so rose in me on the flood of emotion that I said them recklessly. At other times, I argued against myself with a devilish coldness that drew tears. Yes, but I found it just as hard to escape when I was cruel as when I was kind. When the lady's instinct was set on me, there was nothing for it but lifelong servitude or flight.
You dare boast before me and my father that every woman found you irresistible?
Am I boasting? It seems to me I cut the most pitiable of figures.
I still fail to see, Senor Don Juan, that these episodes in your earthly career and in that of the Senor Commander in any way discredit my view of life. Here, I repeat, you have all that you sought without anything that you shrank from.
On the contrary, here I have everything that is appointed me without anything that I have not already tried and found wanting. I tell you that as long as I can conceive something better than myself, I cannot be easy unless I am striving to bring it into existence or clearing the way for it. That is the law of my life. That is the working within me of life's incessant aspiration to higher organization, wider, deeper, intenser self-consciousness, and clearer self-understanding. It was the supremacy of this purpose that reduced love for me to the mere pleasure of a moment. Art for me to the mere schooling of my faculties, religion for me to a mere excuse for laziness, since it had set up a god who looked at the world and saw that it was good against the instinct in me that looked through my eyes at the world and saw that it could be improved. I tell you that in the pursuit of my own pleasure, my own health, my own fortune, I've never known happiness. Was not love for woman that delivered me into her hands. When I was a child and bruised my head against a stone, I ran to the nearest woman and cried away my pain against her apron. Well, when I grew up and bruised my soul against the brutalities and stupidities with which I had to strive, I did again just what I had done as a child. I have enjoyed, too, my rests, my recuperations, my breathing times, my very prostrations after strife, but rather would I be dragged through all the circles of the foolish Italian's inferno than through the pleasures of Europe. That is what has made this place of eternal pleasures so deadly to me. It is the absence of this instinct in you that makes you that strange monster called the devil. It is the success with which you have diverted the attention of men from their real purpose, which in one degree or another is the same as mine, to yours, that has earned you the name of the tempter. It is the fact that they are doing your will, or rather, drifting with your want of will instead of doing their own, that makes them the artificial, false, petulant, wretched creatures they are.
Senor Don Juan, you are uncivil to my friend.
Why should I be civil to them? Or to you? This palace of lies, a truth or two, will not hurt you. Your friends are all the dullest dogs I know. They are not beautiful. They are only decorated. They are not clean. They are only shaved and starched. They are not dignified. They are only fashionably dressed. They are not educated. They are only college passmen. They are not religious.
They are only pure ranters. They are not moral. They are only conventional. They are not virtuous. They are only cowardly. They are not even vicious. They are only frail. They are not artistic. They are only lascivious. They are not prosperous. They are only rich. They are not loyal. They are only servile. Not dutiful. Only sheepish. Not public-spirited. Only patriotic. Not courageous. Only quarrelsome. Not determined. Only obstinate. Not masterful. Only domineering. Not self-controlled. Only obtuse. Not self-respecting. Only vain. Not kind. Only sentimental. Not social. Only gregarious. Not considerate. Only polite. Not intelligent. Only opinionated. Not progressive. Only factious. Not imaginative. Only superstitious. Not just. Only vindictive. Not generous. Only propitiatory. Not disciplined. Only cowed. And not truthful at all. Liars! Every one of them. To the very backbone of their souls.
You know, your flow of words is simply amazing, one. How I wish I could have talked like that to my soldiers.
It is mere talk, though. It has all been said before, but what change has it ever made? What notice has the world ever taken of it?
Yes. It is mere talk. But why is it mere talk? Because, my friend, beauty, purity, respectability, art, morality, religion, bravery, patriotism, and the rest are nothing but words which I or anyone else can turn inside out like a glove. Where are the realities? You would have to plead guilty to my indictment. But fortunately for your self-respect, my diabolical friend, they are not realities. As you say, they are mere words.
On earth, there may be some truth in this because the people are uneducated and cannot appreciate my religion of love and beauty. But here...
Oh, yes, I know. Here there is nothing but love and beauty. It's like sitting for all eternity at the first act of a fashionable play before the complications begin. Never in my worst moments of superstitious terror on earth did I dream that hell was so horrible. I live like a hairdresser in a continual contemplation of beauty, toying with silken dresses. I breathe an atmosphere of sweetness like a confectioner's shop boy. Commander, are there any beautiful women in heaven?
None. Absolutely none. All doubt it. Not two pennies of jewelry among a dozen of them. They might be men of 50.
I'm impatient to get there. Is the word beauty ever mentioned? Are there any artistic people?
No, I give you my word, they won't mount a fine statue, even when it walks past them.
I go.
Don Juan, shall I be frank with you?
Were you not so before?
Oh, as far as I went, yes. But I will now go further and confess to you that men get tired of everything, of heaven no less than of hell, and that all history is nothing but a record of the oscillations of the world between these two extremes. An epoch is but a swing of the pendulum, and each generation thinks the world is progressing because it is always moving. But when you are as old as I am, when you have 1,000 times wearied of heaven, like myself and the commander, and 1,000 times wearied of hell, as you are wearied now, you will no longer imagine that every swing from hell to heaven is an emancipation. Every swing from heaven to hell, an evolution. Where you now see reform, progress, fulfillment of upward tendency, continual ascent by man on the stepping stones of his dead self to higher things, you will see nothing but an infinite comedy of illusion. You will discover the profound truth of the saying of my friend Koheleth in the Bible, you know, that there is nothing new under the sun, vanitas vanitatum.
By heaven, this is worse than your cant about love and beauty. Clever told that you are. Is a man no better than a worm, or a dog than a wolf, because he gets tired of everything?
Shall he give up eating because he destroys his appetite in the act of gratifying it? Is a field idle when it is fallow? Can the commander expend his hellish energy here without accumulating heavenly energy for his next term of blessedness? Granted that a great life force has hit on the device of the clock maker's pendulum and uses the earth for its path. That the history of each oscillation which seems so novel to us, the actors, is but the history of the last oscillation repeated. Nay more, that in the unthinkable infinitude of time, the sun throws off the earth and catches it again 1,000 times as a circus rider throws up a ball. And that our age-long epochs are but the moments between the toss and the catch. Has the colossal mechanism no purpose?
None, my friend. You think because you have a purpose, nature must have one? You might as well expect it to have fingers and toes because you have them.
Ah, but I should not have them if they serve no purpose. And I, my friend, am as much a part of nature as my own finger is a part of me. If my finger is the organ by which I grasp the sword or the mandolin, my brain is the organ by which nature strives to understand itself. My dog's brain serves only my dog's purposes, but my own brain labors at a knowledge that does nothing for me personally but make my body bitter to me and my decay and death a calamity. Were I not possessed with a purpose beyond my own, I'd better be a plowman than a philosopher. For the plowman lives as long as the philosopher, eats more, sleeps better, and rejoices in the wife of his bosom with less misgiving. That is because the philosopher is in the grip of the life force. The life force says to him, I have done 1,000 wonderful things unconsciously by merely willing to live and following the line of the least resistance. But now I want to know myself and my destination and choose my path. So I have made a special brain, a philosopher's brain, to grasp this knowledge for me as the husbandman's hand grasps the plow for me. And this, says the life force to the philosopher, must thou strive to do for me until thou diest, when I shall make another brain and another philosopher to carry on the work.
What is the use of knowing?
Why, to be able to choose the line of greatest advantage instead of yielding in the direction of the least resistance. Does a ship sail to its destination no better than a log drifts nowhere? Well, the philosopher is nature's pilot. And there you have our difference. To be in hell is to drift. To be in heaven is to steer.
On the rocks, most likely.
Which ship goes oftenest on the rocks or to the bottom? The drifting ship or the ship with a pilot on board?
Well, 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 well. Go your way, Senor Don Juan. I prefer to be my own master and not the tool of any blundering universal force. I know that beauty is good to look at, that music is good to hear, that love is good to feel, that they are all good to think about and talk about. I know that to be well exercised in these sensations, emotions, and studies is to be a refined and cultivated being. Whatever they may say of me in churches on earth, I know that it is universally admitted in good society that the Prince of Darkness is a gentleman, and that is enough for me. As to your life force, which you think irresistible, it is the most resistible thing in the world to a person of any character. But if you are naturally vulgar and credulous, as all reformers are, it will thrust you first into religion, where you will sprinkle water on babies to save their souls from me. Then it will drive you from religion into science, where you will snatch the babies from the water sprinkling and inoculate them with disease to save them from catching it accidentally. And then you will take to politics, where you will become the cat's paw of corrupt functionaries and the henchman of ambitious humbugs. The end will be despair and decrepitude, broken nerve and shattered hopes, vain regrets for that worst and silliest of wastes and sacrifices, the waste and sacrifice of the power of enjoyment. In a word, the punishment of the fool who pursues the better before for he has secured the good.
But at least I shall not be bored. The service of the life force has that advantage at all events. So, fare you well, Signor Satan.
Fare you well, Senor Don Juan. I shall often think of our interesting chats about things in general. I wish you every happiness. Heaven, as I said before, suits some people. But if you should change your mind, do not forget that the gates are always open here to the repentant prodigal. If you feel at any time that warmth of heart, sincere, unforced affection, innocent enjoyment, and warm, breathing, palpitating reality.
Why not say flesh and blood at once? Though we have left those two greasy commonplaces behind us.
So my friendly farewell back in my teeth, M. Don Juan.
By no means. But though there is much to be learned from a cynical devil, I really cannot stand a sentimental one. Commander.
Hmm?
You know the way to the frontier of hell and heaven. Be good enough to direct me.
Oh, the frontier is only the difference between two ways of looking at things. Any road will take you across it, if you really want to get there.
Good. Senora, your servant.
But I am going with you.
I can find my own way to heaven, Anna. Not yours.
How annoying.
Bon voyage, Juan.
He wafts a final blast of his great rolling chords after him as a parting salute. A faint echo of the first ghostly melody comes back in acknowledgement.
Ah, there he goes. Oh, how he does talk. You know, they'll never stand that in heaven.
His going is a political defeat. I cannot keep these life worshippers. They all go. This is the greatest loss I've had since that Dutch painter went. Fellow who would paint a hag of 70 with as much enjoyment as a Venus of 20.
Ah, yes, yes, of course. I remember he came to heaven. Rembrandt.
Rembrandt. There is something unnatural about these fellows, and do not listen to their gospel, Commander. It is dangerous. Beware of the pursuit of the superhuman. It leads to an indiscriminate contempt for the human. To a man, horses and cats and dogs are a mere species outside the moral world. To the Superman, men and women are a mere species, too. Also outside the moral world. Now, this Don Juan was kind to women and courteous to men, as your daughter here was kind to her pet cats and dogs. But such kindness is a denial of the exclusively human character of the soul.
But who the deuce is the Superman?
Oh, the latest fashion among the life force fanatics. The Superman is as old as Prometheus. And the 20th century will run after this newest of the old crazes when it gets tired of the world, the flesh, and your humble servant.
Superman is a good cry. And a good cry is half the battle.
Now, my friend, let us hasten to my palace and celebrate your arrival with a grand musical service.
Oh, with pleasure. You are most kind.
Oh, this way, Commander. We go down by the old trapdoor.
Mm-hmm. Good. All the same, Superman is a fine conception. There's something statuesque about it.
Are you ready?
Ah, this reminds me of old times.
Me also.
Stop!
Senora, you cannot come this way. You will have an apotheosis, but you will be at the palace before us.
That is not what I stopped you for. Tell me, where can I find the Superman?
He is not yet created, Senora.
And never will be, probably. Let us proceed.
Not yet created. Then my work is not yet done. I believe in the life to come. A father